it'll be like you, me, and
Jay Frazier.
Welcome to the Wolverine Digest Podcast, the best spot for objective and authentic coverage of Michigan athletics. If you want open dialogue, honest opinions, and in-depth coverage of the maize and blue, this is the podcast for you. And now, here's your host, Brandon Brown, joined as always by Chris Breidler.
I'm just going to start by saying go blue.
Well, as Chris and I embark on an experience here to just talk to each other in the wall and nobody else on a random, icy, shitty, cold, just blah.
Another day in Michigan. Just another day in the great state.
And Chris is ready to get out of here. Chris will be off next week on a little vacay with the family. Much needed, apparently, right?
We've talked about it before, but like the lack of sunshine, like I know it's been a little bit better this month than it was last month, but yeah, I feel like right around February, man, that shit hits and it's like, you just got to get out of here for a little while. Got to go get some vitamin D, going to go down to Florida, put on the mankini. You know, I've still got my winter body here, so I apologize to all the folks in Florida who are, you know, going to have to deal with it. I got to be comfortable out there on the beach.
Chris will shave a two-piece into the body hair.
There's going to have to be some manscaping that happens before I leave. There's no doubt about it.
So Chris will be doing that next week. I was sick. Dude, the sickest I've been in a decade or more probably last week.
Yeah.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I was a dead body. Silver lining, I lost about 9 or 10 pounds. I feel good about that.
There you go.
I literally didn't eat for 3 days. I just laid in bed, barely did any work, barely looked at my phone. That was rough. So that wasn't ideal, but I'm back at it now. Still coming over the last little bit of a cough. So last week we were off. Next week we're probably going to be off unless – I don't know. Last time you were in Florida,
That was courtesy of Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh was out job hunting, and we felt, you know, I think I went live from like the Star Wars area of Disney. This time we're going to be at Universal, so a little bit different. And I plan on, I need to detox a little bit. I got a detox from Michigan. I got a detox from the internet. Detox from social media. Like I just need to cleanse my soul a little bit. Get some sunshine with the fam.
On Space Mountain. Like, Harbaugh should probably come back to Michigan, last year.
I'm not sure what he's doing, Brandon.
We're hopefully going to leave Chris alone next week. So we knew we were kind of going to be off next week probably. I'm like, dude, we got to get this pod, dude. We got to get a pod in there.
Talk about something.
Not like a ton really going on. I mean, in terms of like big breaking news or things we absolutely need to talk about. Spring football is going on. So the official Michigan account is kind of leaking some stuff out and the new roster is out there. So that in itself kind of spurs some conversation. But again, it's not like we're going to get any like behind the scenes peek. They're not going to open things up. We're not going to get any real news. We talked about the new coaching hires, Kirk Campbell, Chris Partridge. I put an article out there today about Chris Partridge, some of the things he said to John Jansen. I think it's a really big deal that he's back. He's phenomenal on the recruiting trail. He now has a couple years of defensive coordinator experience under his belt. I think this is probably Jim Harbaugh's best staff he's ever had. I mean, like, you know, that's
sure feels like it.
That's I don't have that as a burning question, but I thought that might come up now that we're kind of getting into some real football, at least for a couple weeks here with the spring game a little over a month out. But
well, what was nice was that time. To hear Partridge actually say, you know, when he got back, a noticeable difference in the culture. I mean, that, you know, that thing is to hear something like that is really encouraging because, you know, we live it. We talk about it every day. We continue to experience it. And here's a guy who left for a couple of years and came back and was like, holy shit, like this is not the same place that I left. And so noticeable difference from a guy like that. But to your point, should be, you know, phenomenal on the recruiting trail. And I agree. I think that if they can keep this group intact, I know that there's questions right now, some questions about Jesse Minner.
There you go.
You know, no update as far as I know. I don't think anything is going to happen there. But if they can keep this group intact, if Harbaugh can roll with this coaching staff into 2023, I do agree. I think it's the best staff he's had since he's been there in Ann Arbor. Couple that with arguably the best roster he's had on both sides of the ball, top to bottom, since he's been in Ann Arbor. I think it spells good things for Michigan this year.
Yeah, yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, things are rolling with the football team. I think Chris Partridge even said, like, he probably feels a little bit like an outsider still. It's been like a week, right? He comes in, he said, you guys have it humming. It's like, bro, you're on the payroll now. You can say us or we, but no, I mean, like, you know, he's been away for a little bit and, you know, was doing his thing down there in the SEC. And I mentioned something about that in the article today. As good as he was as a recruiter, he had really solidified himself in Georgia, and he was always a star in New Jersey and the Northeast, where he hailed from and where he was familiar. Now he's got an even bigger footprint in SEC country, being down at Ole Miss. He talked about expanding in some of those other states. So I think that just, you know, as good as he was when he was at Michigan the first time, I think he's even better now in every way. As a recruiter, he's expanded his footprint. As a coach and as a student of the game, being a defensive coordinator and learning kind of the whole view and the whole vision of a defense. I mean, I think it's really big that he's back on Michigan staff. And so look forward to see what that looks like. I don't know how much we'll really know or learn. This just in.
I just saw it. Jim Harbaugh media availability.
Well, we're not really supposed to say, but we'll say it. When is it? Tomorrow? There it is. So
nice little less than 24-hour notice. Not bad. Not bad.
In classic. I wasn't even going to be in the area tomorrow at that time, but I guess I will be now. Yeah, so there you go. Good.
You know, going to get access to Jim Harbaugh tomorrow. He's going to go meet with the press, talk a little bit about spring ball. So, you know,
as I was literally out of those things, we're not going to know anything really about spring ball. We get an email saying we're going to get Harbaugh tomorrow. So there you go. pardon me if I have to cough a couple of times. I apologize. I'll try to maybe mute the mic or something. But anyway, we talked about Partridge last time we were on. I think that had like just happened the last time we did an episode. We talked about Kirk Campbell a couple times now, and yeah, we'll see what we find out tomorrow.
What do you guys think we should ask Jim Harbaugh tomorrow? Yeah, you know, Brandon and I will show up at the press conference, throw out some questions. What do you think, if you know Brandon and I are going to be in the room, what should we ask Jim Harbaugh tomorrow? What are some of your burning questions? What do you want to hear from that man?
Speaking of burning questions, that's exactly what we're going to do today. Typically, we kind of try to burn through these and get them done because we're like, all right, Chris, we have 31 minutes. We've got 10 questions to answer. Can we do it? Yep. We're going to pretty much focus the whole time on that. Of course, if you guys have questions or you want to throw stuff out there, absolutely feel free to do that. And we'll address those as we go. But we are going to get into burning questions. I wanted to ask, Chris, we've had the audio thing seemingly figured out. We turn off the soundboard while we're going, and it doesn't seem to throw you off. But how do you feel about burning questions with no music in the background at all?
You know what? That's difficult because I feel like it adds to the ambiance. It adds to the, you know, it just,
I mean, listen to that.
It takes, here's the thing. We know if I start to get echo issues, we'll shut her down. We'll shut her down.
We'll come back to the music in just a second. It wasn't a question, but AJ Cooper threw us a little donation. Yes, I know. I'm like, I don't even know what Chris is doing over there. During the football season,
I'm basically staring out the window, just waiting for sun to come.
During the football season, I talked to Chris more than any other human on the planet, and it's not close. It's not. It's multiple times every single day. And now it's kind of like I'll fire him a text like, you know, feel like Simon and Garfunkel over here, dude. The sound is silent, and we got nothing. There's not as much back and forth. Only one show versus five, and we haven't even been doing the one show here lately.
Do you think anybody has the balls, Adam Wissinger? I'm not sure if that's how you say the last name. Hope I got it right. You think anybody's going to ask Jim Harbaugh if he's officially done? You think that question's going to come out tomorrow? I mean, we know we won't get an answer, but do you think anybody will ask it? Should you ask it? Should Brandon be the one that asks, are you officially done flirting with the NFL? Maybe we should put that on Brandon's shoulders tomorrow.
Well, I don't have a problem answering that, but you know, I always go in thinking, I want to ask a question that he's actually going to answer. As soon as somebody else that's like maybe not from the market starts to ask a question, I'm like, well, this is a waste of time. I know, you know, going in when they start to frame the question or they're getting into something that it's going to be, I'm not afraid to ask the questions that he's going to be a dink about them, but you know, he's going to be a dink. So it's kind of like, what's the point?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, It's a fine.
He's been doing it a long time, man. He's been doing it a long time. He knows what he wants to answer, what he doesn't want to answer.
Because there's what you get, Cody. And I don't think Cody's being, you know, being a dick about it. But people a lot of times will say, like, oh, a bunch of softball questions for Harbaugh. And it's like, bro, when you're in the room with him all the time, you start to figure out what's worth it and what's not.
Yeah.
And if he's not going to say anything, then you're pissing into the wind, man. It just, there's no point. And then you look like an idiot, and then he doesn't like you, and then Dave's up there with this. I mean, it's just like, I don't know. It's one of those weird things. I don't really care. Clearly, like, I didn't have the best reputation around that.
Let me ask you this. If there was no fear of repercussion, obviously I would ask about, you know, are you done flirting with the NFL? What is the relationship like with Ward Manuel? You know, what was it? What was the hang up there? Because it did seem like there was a disconnect there towards the end where, you know, what was that late meeting with Denver, you know, where executives or ownership came into Ann Arbor? What was that conversation about, you know, after it seemed like, you know, those things were done? Like, I would want to know the answers to those.
I mean,
things.
Trust me, dude. If we could plunk Harbaugh in the ass with a truth serum dart and then go to the press conference, be a very different animal.
I'll arrive early and I'll hang out in like the shrubbery over there with like a blow dart,
dude. If you It'd knew that
incredible press get, conference,
if you knew that you were going to get unfettered truth from Jim Harbaugh,
God. Unfiltered, unplugged, nothing but the truth. It would be an incredible press conference.
It would be incredible. It would be incredible. So that's something that I do wrestle with, because I see, you know, afterwards on social and even ourselves in the room, I hear the questions we're asking, and like, you know, some of it's not that hard hitting, but you're not going to get it. Yeah. You're going to get that like one or two word answer, the stare.
Well, I was going to say I was on when I went on the podcast with the guys from Mediascapes, you know, that this topic came up, and I always refer back to, I don't want to single him out, but he was asking Jim Harbaugh a question, and Harbaugh basically responded with, I think he said something to the effect of, you know, I feel like you show up here with the story already written, and then you're just looking to get a soundbite out of me, and totally made an ass out of this guy. And everybody just kind of looked at each other like, that's why we don't ask shit like that. So, you know, you got to play the game.
On the flip side, I almost want to be like, yeah, there are some pretty big stories. Jim, do you want to give us a little insight? Like, that's what we're here to do. You know, the NFL thing, the contract thing, Ward. Can we get a little bit on that? I mean,
yeah. What are your thoughts about the NCAA coming in and, you know, some possible punishment? Like, are you able to speak about that at all? Has anything come from the NCAA yet? Do you expect anything to come? A lot of questions that I would like to ask. We'll have to feel it out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years almost now, man. Like Harbaugh's entire tenure at Michigan, like, you know, we know how it's going to, and some have certainly been doing it a lot longer than that overall, but I mean, anybody who's been here for the entirety of Jim Harbaugh's career knows how it goes, man. You get those kind of responses, you get those kind of answers. I mean, dude,
how does he expect to utilize a healthy Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards, two guys who have clearly proven that they can be on the field, you know?
I don't know what kind of an answer you'd get from that, but at least that's a football question. I feel like he would be open to that one.
Yeah.
Like, I've said this from the beginning. If you ask Harbaugh something that he deems even remotely important or near and dear to him, or I guess on topic, he'll give you some good answers.
Yeah.
He's just not going to put a lot of those things in that category that we as the media or some of the fans deem important or on topic. Like, you know, the NFL stuff, he's not, he's in spring football mode. He's never going to touch that. He's not going to touch that with a 50-foot pole. He's just not. Yeah. And meanwhile, here we are still with no new contract signed. He's still just Ward Manuel's in the Maldives or so. I don't even know where the hell
we're all of the belief now that the reason that the new contract isn't in place, A, he's already under contract, so there really isn't a huge sense of urgency there. B, though, we think it's the NCAA violations, you know, potentially trying to see what the fallout from that is before a new contract is figured out or at least settled on.
I guess. I mean, that I would love to ask that question, but he's come on.
I mean, I think that's a fair question. What is the holdup with the new contract?
You're wasting
we know he's not going to be coaching under his current contract, right? Come week one. We know that.
I don't know. I don't know that. I mean, I would think not, but what are we waiting on? That would be a really good question.
Fair question, right? I think that's a fair question.
Yeah, it is a fair question.
I mean, I think he deserves to get paid. I think he deserves a raise. And so it's not, you know, I'm in his corner when it comes to that.
And the last thing I'll say about that is we also get checked sometimes by the media people up there. They'll literally step in and be like, we're not answering anything. I'm like, what the hell are we doing then? What are we doing here?
Just so you guys know, before we get started here, we're not going to talk about anything related to the NFL, Jesse Minter. We're not going to talk about any position battles at the moment. By the time you get done, it's like, all right,
Jim, what'd you have for lunch? Like, I mean, what are we doing here, man? Yeah. So anyway, we'll see how tomorrow goes. It will be good. I mean, it will be good to talk the new hires, the new the roster changes. I mean, we'll get into that. I think so. There are good things that aren't like hot button. I still think it'll be very valuable to go to that and hear what he has to say. But a lot of the, like, if people could make a list of the 10 things they'd want to ask him about the most, like, the top four are probably off limits. And that's just
no doubt.
So there it is. All right. Burning cues. I think we're ready to jump right in.
Should we hit it?
Yeah. I would like to start because, as we discussed, I do have one basketball topic just to throw it out there, get a little bit of back and forth, and then it'll be all football after that. Sound cool?
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. Burning.
I miss that music.
Questions, and hopefully the audio cooperates for you, Chris. I know how much of a pain in the ass that is over there. Here we go. I'm going to start off with the basketball one. Very good win for Michigan over Michigan State. That was obviously an emotional game. Michigan was looking to get even against Michigan State for the season series, and they win by 12. They had a nice win against Michigan State. So, Chris, when we talked about the final remaining, it was 7 games. I think you and I both had loss. Coming out of the gate and actually lost again for tomorrow's game against Rutgers. Yep. And instead, they got a win against Michigan State. Big picture, I don't know if it matters because I still don't really see this as a tournament team unless they get real hot and win the Big Ten tournament. But now they've got 4 games left at Rutgers, at home against Wisconsin, on the road against Illinois, on the road against Indiana. So at Rutgers, Wisconsin, at Illinois, at Indiana, what do they do?
2-2 last 4 games.
Okay, yeah,
feeling a little more optimistic. I'm feeling a little more optimistic about that road game at Rutgers and then at home against Wisconsin. I don't think Wisconsin is anything special. I do think those last 2 games, those are both on the road, right? At Illinois and at Indiana, is that correct? Correct. You know, Michigan's not going to make the NCAA tournament. They're not. And I know that they're, you know, you're playing for your pride and you know, obviously anytime you play against a team like Michigan State, you're going to get up for it because it's a big rivalry game. But at the end of the day, I see them splitting, which will be consistent pretty much with how the entire season has gone. Win 2, lose 2, win 2, lose 2, lose 3, win. You know what I mean? Like there really hasn't been any consistency with this team. And so I would expect to see the final 4 games play out like 90% of the season has already.
So I actually have them going 2-2 as well. And I have the 2 wins coming at home against Wisconsin and at Illinois. So, you know, maybe they go 3-1 over the stretch, or maybe they just go bananas and go 4-0. Is that possible? I mean,
that's possible.
At Indiana, that's a really tough game. That's a really tough
game. You know what? I take that back. It's not possible. It's not possible with a team like this that is so inconsistent at times and can go through such big droughts. I mean, it's just the runs that happen during these games. You can that's why their schedule looks the way it does. That's why they are as inconsistent as they are. And I think there's some games where they put together a complete game. I mean, they looked good against Michigan State, and I like a lot of what they did, but I just don't see it carrying over. Like I said, if the best what is the saying that the best predictor of the future is to look at what's happened previously. Yeah. If you look at what's happened previously with this team, 2-2 is probably the most likely scenario.
And even if they win out, win all 4 of them, they don't get to that 20-win mark. They'd be 19-12. But you'd have a lot of momentum, a couple of really nice wins in there, and the tournament committee would start to look at that a little bit, and then they'd have the Big Ten. I don't know.
I like having Reed and Dickinson on the floor at the same time. Yeah. If we could get more of that, that seemed pretty effective. I know that there's not a lot on the bench when you do that, but that seemed like a pretty good combination out there. So there's definitely some things that they can do, but you know, at the end of the day, again, just look at the way that the season's gone, and I think 2-2 is fair. I think 2-2 is actually pretty optimistic.
Yeah, that's what I see too. I think they might do the rack playing at Rutgers. That's such a tough place to play, dude, and Rutgers is pretty damn good. So I have them losing tomorrow, winning at home against Wisconsin, winning at Illinois, and losing at Indiana. So we'll see how that ends up going.
Does Hunter Dickinson pull out the ski mask for Wisconsin at home? Does he try to recapture the magic?
I don't know what that guy's doing some of the times, man. I really don't. All right, what you got, man? What's your first burning cue?
Oh, shit, I forgot we were doing this. It's been so long. All right, back to football.
Yes, sir, let's finish.
Brandon, I've seen it out there. So, obviously, we had the question about Jesse Minner earlier in the show, interviewed with the Philadelphia Eagles. He's replacing Mike McDonald, who was in Ann Arbor for a year. You lose George Hilo after a year. It's been a little bit of turnover on Harbaugh's staff as of late. And I've seen some people try to paint this is a good thing. This is actually a good thing that you have assistants that are so sought after. But they're also, if they're taking positions and they're there for a short amount of time, I'm not sure how good it is. And so I'll just ask you, is this a good thing for Michigan that these things are happening, or do you view it as more of a negative, more of a positive, or more of a negative?
It's not a good thing for Michigan football. It's a good thing for the optics. It's a good thing for those coaches. It's a good thing for Jim Harbaugh's coaching tree, if you will. But no, I mean, dude, losing really good assistants to anywhere, it's not good for what you do on the field. I mean, like, we've sung Jim Harbaugh's praises for the ability to go out and find Jesse Minter after losing Mike McDonald. Like, I'm still shocked when I think about that, because I wasn't 100% sold on McDonald. He was incredible. And I wasn't sold on Minter. He was maybe better. I mean, it's been incredible how he's been able to find those two guys 2 years in a row. And if you got to try to do it a third year in a row, no, dude, it's not. It looks good. Jim Harbaugh can certainly pat himself on the back. He can sell that to new assistant coaches. That's a good thing.
No doubt.
But for the immediate product on the field as spring ball is going and as they get ready for the 2023 season, no, dude, it's not good. You want to keep really good coaches on your staff. And it's hard to do. I mean, the best head coaches and the best programs deal with it every year. I mean, it's not like Michigan's the only program dealing with it. But the run that Michigan has been on, you'd want some continuity recruiting-wise, on the field-wise, player development-wise, like all of that stuff. You want to keep those guys in-house.
That's all I'm saying. And I think to an extent it is good, but when it comes to guys like Mike McDonald and Jesse Minner specifically at the defensive coordinator position, a position that is so important, you want to get more than 1 year out of those guys. And if you're losing those guys after a single season, even if they have a lot of success, and I am starting to get the echo, if you could turn that shit off. Even if you have a lot of success with those guys, you know, losing them after a year and hoping to recreate that magic, I think all of us, you know, we're pretty much in the same boat when Mike McDonald was lost, that shit, this defense is probably going to take a step back. And Jesse Minner was largely an unknown. And it turns out that they might have gotten better under Minter. I'm just not sure if that's a sustainable model, if you can continue to replace guys year after year, and then what that does on the recruiting trail as well. And so, yeah, in some respects, it's a good thing, but I don't think it's a good thing if you're only getting a single year out of these guys in those key positions.
Yeah, that's tough, man. I mean,
it's credit to guys like Sharon Moore and some of the other tenured, you know, assistants that have been on staff for a while. I mean, you know, those guys are really the lifeblood of the recruiting and that program and that coaching staff. And it's not like Sharon Moore hasn't had opportunities to go coach elsewhere. Maybe it's, you know, not the opportunity he's looking for, but he's been pretty clear that he's not in any hurry to leave Ann Arbor and loves being a part of Jim Harbaugh's staff. And so, you know, that's one example where I think, you know, here's a guy who's sought after, he's interviewed or had the opportunity to interview, and he's opted to remain at Michigan. And that's a good thing to me, in my mind, not when you lose him after a year of service.
I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that Sharon Moore could have left and taken a job where he is undoubtedly the 100% offensive coordinator controlling every single thing on an offense, or, you know, whatever he might be looking for. Maybe it would be considered a lateral move or a much smaller school or whatever the case may be. I mean, we don't know all the phone calls that he's getting, but I mean, he's not even 40 years old. Jim Harbaugh has gone to bat for him a million times. That dude's going to be a head coach somewhere soon.
Yep.
It just, so yes, that, you know, credit to him for staying at Michigan as long as he has, and he's climbed the ladder. You know, he went from tight end to O-line to O-line OC and now OC. I mean, like, well, he's still doing O-line, but now he's the only OC, I guess, right, as of right now. Well, that's another thing.
I mean, looks like that's the way it's going to be. Still think Harbaugh's fingerprints are going to be on it, but yeah, it looks like, the you know, he has the proverbial keys in 2023.
So, I mean, like, it's been a great trajectory for him at Michigan, but there's no doubt if he wanted to leave and go do his own thing, could have done it 10 times over for sure. Yep. So, yeah, it's not like bad, like, oh my God, this is horrible. Like, that's not the emotion that it evokes, but you should, like, if really good coaches are at your program, like, you want to keep them, but it's hard. Like, there's a reason why they're good. They want, they have opportunities to go do other things. So yeah, that's a catch 22. It really is, because it does bode well. It looks really good, but like, you want the best of the best. And Jim Harbaugh's done a really good job of stacking those guys up.
I guess the only thing that makes me feel better about it is it doesn't seem like these guys are leaving under circumstances, with the exception of Weiss, where it's like, you know, or Josh Gattis, where
we've seen some of that before, for sure. We've
seen that. It feels different with these guys, that they're leaving the program in good hands. They're going to a good opportunity. Somebody else who's capable is filling in. And so it doesn't feel like it's leaving Michigan high and dry. And I guess maybe that's a reason to feel a little more positive about it. It doesn't have the feeling of a Josh Gattis or a Matt Weiss for the most part.
There's no doubt. All turnover is not created equal.
By the way, this is my, you can't see it, but this is my son's school calling. This will be the second day now, the second day that schools have been closed. So shout out to Linden Public Schools.
We were talking about that before we started, for those of you who are curious about just the week that has been. My kid was off school today. My wife's school was closed. Chris's kids, I mean, it's been one thing after another.
No school. I mean, they canceled school today. And there was, I woke up in the morning and there wasn't shit on the ground. It was totally fine. And then it started snowing this afternoon. I'm like, well, fuck, I know they're going to cancel it again. And sure as shit, here we are.
There you go. All right. So good segue into my question, though, Chris, with all the talk about Sherrone Moore and the assistants right there, Sherrone Moore specifically. Chris Brailer, you are now the offensive line coach at Michigan. There is a game this Saturday. Who is starting on the offensive line? This Saturday.
Starting on the offensive line?
Yes.
Well, you got Nugent, you've got Keegan, Zinner.
Those are the layups.
Miles Hinton, I think. Right. Is he right tackle or left tackle?
He's the right tackle.
And then I'm going to go Percy on the other side.
Okay. You like Percy out there. You like
Percy. He's a big dude. He's a big dude. I want big dude.
We had that before. So you go Miles Hinton, number 78 on Michigan spring roster, by the way, 6'6", 320 at right tackle, and Jeff Percy, number 79 at left tackle, protecting JJ's blind side at 6'8", 309.
There you go.
I don't hate it.
Or Carson Barnhart or Trente Jones. I mean, you know, those are the names that come to mind. It's the large bodies. But I will say Carson Barnhart got a lot of good experience last season. I thought he was a pretty good player. So he's obviously going to have something to say about it. The good news is, and we've talked about this at length, that Michigan is going to have plenty of options for guys to fill those starting roles. They're two and three deep on the offensive line.
You know what I just realized, and maybe this is all part of the plan. I don't know his you know, class or graduate status, but Ladarius Henderson is not on Michigan's spring roster.
Yeah, I heard he's still finishing up at Arizona State. Does plan to be on campus here in the fall, so
not coming until the summer. Okay, I would
not expect him to be in the starting role.
So thought maybe that was part of the plan. Like I said, I feel like that would have been obviously a much bigger deal if it wasn't. Here's the deal, dude. Everybody's got the same three up the middle. You've got Nugent at center. You've got your two lockdown guards, maybe the best guard duo in the entire country, quite frankly, and Trevor Keegan and Zach Zinner. And then at right tackle, man, I'm with you, dude. I love the idea of 6'6", long, 320 Miles Hinton, who has started quite a few games out there. But I have a real hard time saying, you know what, Trente, Carson, you're not starting this year. That's really, that is really, really hard for me to do.
Yeah.
Really hard for me to do.
Yep.
And maybe Carson Barnhart does kick out there and play some left tackle. I don't know. I love 6'8 Percy. Even if you're not the fleetest of foot, that takes a long time to get around 6'8".
It's a lot of man that you got to try to get around.
A lot of man,
yeah,
to get around. And Ladarius Henderson does have some starting experience at left tackle. He's not quite that long, but he's 6'5", 320 or something like that in his own right. So, dude, this offensive line room, I mean, I put the article out a while ago. I think it's the best that's ever been at Michigan in terms of top to bottom. No, there's not a number one overall draft pick in the room like Jake Long or, you know, as good as John Jansen was or some of the, you know, some of the guards at Michigan, you know, these all pro type of guys that have played in the NFL for 10 or 15 years. I understand that. Taylor Lewan, by the way, was released by the Titans. There's another very high draft pick that came out of Michigan and was elite in college. I don't know if they've got a guy like that, but when you can go like literally 12 or 15 deep or whatever it is, it's crazy. It's crazy. And I think you could put a large mixture of any five of them out there and you'd be good. Like you'd be productive. The quarterback would be protected. The running game would work. I don't think there's any in any world where you switch up that middle three.
No,
you and I don't know a lot about Drake Nugent.
I was a little surprised. And again, it's a top 10 list. It's subjective, but I did see that Pro Football Focus College put out top 10 interior linemen, had Zach Zinner at number 3. I believe Drake Nugent at number 5. No Trevor Keegan on that list. I was a little bit surprised by that, just given his experience and you know all that he's achieved at the University of Michigan. But yeah, that 3 in the center to me seems solid. I don't think there's any question that it's going to be those 3 guys in the middle. And then when you get to the tackles, it's you're choosing from experience, large, it's just there's plenty of good options out there.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'd call it a knock because he's played well and he's been a Remington finalist or watch list guy. He's a little small, a little small. Drake Nugent, 6'2", 306. That's not undersized. I mean, Michigan has trotted out centers less than 300 pounds before, but I mean, like Olu is a big old dude.
I've seen some of the clips and some of the film pop up on him on social media, and he's really good. Really good, very physical. Yeah. I mean, low center gravity. Yeah, super smart.
Super smart, mature. That's everything. He has every trait you want. And if you can get away with being a little short and a little smaller, it's at center. And like he'd be okay right there. So yeah, I love what Michigan's got at the O-line. I think they're going to be as good as they've been. It's crazy. Joe Moore Award winning group 2 years in a row going for number 3.
Likely it's going to happen too. All right, now over to me.
Over to you.
Number 2 here, Brandon. This one's pretty straightforward. I mentioned it a little bit earlier in the show. We talked about both of them, possibly asking Jim Harbaugh about this tomorrow. Who do you think will finish with more total yards? So total yards between Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards in 2023. Who has more total yards? Both guys have shown the ability to make big plays, home run threats. Donovan Edwards provides a little bit more of a different element. He can get out and play in the slot, catch the ball deep. Hell, he can even play quarterback if he needs to. Blake Corum is Mr. Consistency. Who finishes with more total yards in 2023?
I'm still going to go with Corum. I still think he's just going to get the lion's share of the carries. I mean, I'm sure that was discussed, when he was making his decision whether to come back or not. Like, he's not going to want to come back and do less than he's ever done before, I don't think. And I just don't – dude, am I really doing this? Are you really putting me in a position to bash Jim Harbaugh on the offense again already, like 2 days into spring ball? I just don't have enough faith in them using Donovan Edwards creatively and out of the backfield as a receiver to think that it's going to be enough to have more yards than Blake Corum. He's going to carry the ball, not as much as Blake. He's going to be really productive. I just don't think he's going to amass the numbers as a receiver, which is where he would have the advantage to maybe take over Blake when it comes to a yardage total. Now, yes, obviously Drew throws, if there's an injury or something, that's a wild. I'm assuming you meant like all things
expect
even,
them to play healthy the entire year. Correct.
All things even when it comes to availability. Yes. I think it's Corum. He's gonna go way over 1,000 yards. I mean, he's gonna carry the ball a ton. I think Donovan Edwards is gonna get his carries too. And I just, you know, I mean, what does he get? 2 catches a game, maybe? I mean, like receivers don't even get that, you know. Right. So I mean, like, I just don't think there's enough to go around through the air where it would make that big of a difference.
I think you're right. I think both guys go over 1,000 yards, but you know, you're right. Blake Corum did not make this return to have a diminished role in 2023. I think he's going to be the feature back, rightfully so, deservedly so. He's proven he is that guy. He's going to be a Heisman Trophy candidate right out of the gate. Probably going to play that role for a majority of the season. If he stays healthy, if Blake Corum stays healthy for the entire season, I think that dude's going to be in New York. And so I give the edge to Blake Corum, but man, Donovan Edwards, you're right. If Michigan, and I think Donovan said this at a recent camp that he was at, where, you know, basically something to the effect of I've proven what I can do and I need to be on the field, and he needs to be getting his reps. And I hope that they find a way to utilize his talent, because it's the same way, you know, you look at some of these other guys on the roster and you think, man, that's so much talent to just have standing over on the sidelines. Even if they're not necessarily getting the ball when they're out there, having them out on the field and maybe putting Donovan in the slot where he's a threat and can kind of distract the secondary or make people think twice, you got to find a way to get Donovan Edwards on the field, because if he's just standing on the sideline for, you know, I don't know what, 60% of the reps while Blake Corum's out on the field, to me, that's a huge loss for this Michigan offense. He's too talented to be over there.
Yeah, no, it is a bit of a conundrum. I mean, they're both so good, and they're both good at different things in slightly different ways. I mean, I do think you could feature either of them in any offense as the running back one, and they would be incredible.
Donovan Edwards starts on any other Big Ten team, and I think that includes Ohio State. There's zero question in my mind.
Yeah, so. It's a good problem to have, I guess. But yeah, when you're talking about keeping them both happy, keeping them both healthy, getting as much out of them as possible, and putting the defenses that face them in conflict, it's tricky. It is a little bit tricky when you've got two guys like that. But total yardage, I'll go with Corum. I don't think it's by a lot, because I think they're both going to be effective running the ball.
Yeah,
I don't think Corum's going to finish the year with like 0 catches, but I just don't think Donovan will have that many more than Corum to where he'll amass 400 or 500 more yards than Corum does through the air to, you know, mitigate that difference on the ground. So yeah, it's be interesting to see what it looks like. All right. So one of the things that's made news a little bit about the spring roster is one of our favorite potential freaks on the team, dude, Amarion Walker.
I feel like this guy's no offense to Andrell Anthony out there, but I feel like Amarion Walker is going to become the new Andrell for me. I'm very intrigued by this guy. I expect big things. I hope I'm not expecting too much out of the young kid, but man, it sure seems like he's primed to fill a pretty big role on the Michigan defense.
So he's now rocking number one. He's listed at 6'3", 180. I think he's both taller and heavier than that. I'm not at, like... still get an Andrell mention. Fantastic. Fantastic. So he's listed at 6'3", 180. Chris, you and I have been next to this dude multiple. I think he's taller and bigger than that. Like,
feels like it.
They have Will Johnson as 15 pounds heavier than him. I just don't see that. Maybe. No. I don't know, man. I mean, you know, dudes are built and they carry it differently, but whatever. Physical specimen, tall, fast as hell. The shuttle time heard around the world, like it would have been the fastest at the NFL, like ever or some shit for his position group. And he can absolutely jump out of the gym. He's got phenomenal ball skills, like every single thing you need to be an impact player, either at receiver or at defensive back, which he's now listed as both. Chris, is Amarion Walker your day one starting cornerback opposite Will Johnson?
I mean, based on the limited information I have, and obviously, Brandon, I don't expect to be getting any invites into spring practice so that I can see how things are working. Given the options available, I say, fuck it, do it. Yes, absolutely. He's got the size. He's got the speed. You know, you've got, and here's the thing, the way the schedule lines up is you've got the first 4 weeks to let him get his sea legs, let him get, you know, his shit together.
We know how the staff loves to do that.
Correct. So get him out there, let him run, see how he does. I mean, you've got other guys who are more, I guess, you know, used to playing the position, like McBurrows, and you've got some other guys out there that are more natural in the position. But I mean, dude, he's made the change to number one. They've got him listed as a defensive back. They're talking to him. Yeah, you know, you hear all these things coming out about his athleticism and how talented he is. I think that guy on one side, Will Johnson on the other, two guys who have great ball skills, who can make things difficult in the secondary. I roll the dice and see how he does week one, week two. And then if you got to adjust after week three, then, you know, before you get into conference play, then maybe you do.
And you're talking both of them, 6'2", 6'3", 6'4". I think Omarion, I do think he's taller than Will. I think he's taller than 6'3". The range, the speed, the athleticism overall. And then you throw in, yeah, he's not super. I wanted two points I wanted to make out of this. One was that you mentioned maybe the next most likely guy who's like never played, Jaden McBurrows. Like there's not anybody else there that's like, well, if you play Walker, that means you're taking X off the field. There is no exactly. X. There's nobody else.
Yep.
And the second point is tons and tons of help from incredible secondary mates in Mike Sainristil, Rod Moore, RJ yep. Moten, and Makari Page. Like, this is when you break a physical freak into a new position because he's got the homies there to help him.
I'll and say
I,
this.
I think it's an incredible formula for him to succeed early.
I went from being concerned about that position to the fact that Omarion is in the fold. I feel excited about the potential that's there, and I feel like that has the potential to be really, really good at both corner positions. And so, yeah, I would say if I was making the call tomorrow, shit, I don't have any insight into what's going on in practice. All I hear are the sound bites and some of the video clips that are coming out. But from what I've seen and what I've heard and what some of the whispers are out there, I say roll with him for the first couple weeks, see how he does, and then let him adjust to it. Because that's I mean, arguably the most difficult position to play in all of football. I mean, you know, you got the quarterback position, you got to know a tremendous about what's going on, where everybody's got to be, but the corner position is a difficult position to play. And if he, you know, if he's a natural there, if he proves he can at least keep up with the other guys that are in the running, I think he's got the type of physical attributes that you would want to keep him in that position and let him grow into it and excel.
And who knows, man? I mean, maybe Jaden McBurrows is just locking cats up during spring ball and he stops. I mean, you never know.
But you know what? Why would they give Omarion
the number?
McBurrows number? I know. I mean, it seems like there's a bit of a conflict there.
We've seen it before. Guys want a number that they want. They give it to them. Let them battle it out.
Number one. Not willingly. No. You're not giving up the number one jersey.
That's why you've seen. Trying to think of an example on the team without being too mean about it. Like Quentin Johnson has had multiple numbers since he's been at Michigan because guys keep coming in. They want that number. Sure. They pass them up and they get it. I think Iman Dennis has had a couple different numbers because he's moved around. So I think his has partially been because I think he was on defense and maybe offense and he's been a very good special teamer. So, but
Sanger still has yeah. three different numbers, but you know, albeit maybe for different reasons because he's moving up in different ways, you know?
Yeah. You when see
started,
it though.
He started at 19, then he went to 5, then he went to 0. Is that how it worked?
Yeah. You see it though. You see guys get, you know, the number that they want when they're freshmen and then somebody else comes in and they're, you know, they get moved off of it and that happens. Yeah. And then the next move is sometimes to the transfer portal. So we'll see what that looks like.
I'll take him. I'll roll the dice.
Happily. I love the idea of it. I love the idea of it, dude. And this is probably us just getting, this is the NCAA video game in us. You see 6'4", 190, you see fast.
I don't give a shit. If it all goes to shit, it doesn't fall on my shoulders. So I say, yeah, what the hell? Roll with it.
I mean, dude, this is like NCAA. You get a freshman corner who's 6'4 with like a 95 speed. You're like, I'll put him at quarterback. He's probably all right.
Corner. I can make something happen.
I said quarterback. Yeah. Put him at QB. He'll run. We'll run the option. He'll be fine.
Put him whatever, wherever. Yeah. He's got 95, yeah. 98 speed, whatever it is. You can utilize him in a lot of different areas. Let's stick
real quick. While we're talking about the spring roster. Yeah. Just a paid question real fast. I don't think JJ did put on any weight. I think he was listed at 196 at the end of the year, and I think that's where he's still
put on some. I don't think it's significant, but you know, you're in that weight program. You're working with Ben Herbert. I'm sure he's putting out a little bit of muscle.
Still listed at 196. That doesn't necessarily mean that nothing's happened, but yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, what you got?
All right, let's stick with the cornerback position. Recently, Pro Football Focus put out a top 10 list of guys. Now, they took overall. It didn't matter what eligibility they had. It didn't matter, you know, what class they were. They said if these guys were all eligible for the draft right now, here's the top 10 that would be taken. And to my surprise, Will Johnson was listed as a top 10 pick right now going to the Philadelphia Eagles as a cornerback. So I'm going to ask you, Brandon, we're both high on Will Johnson. We both think the dude's incredible. We do think he's a future first-round pick. Is he a top 10 pick right now?
That did surprise me.
Or is PFF being a little overzealous there?
So here's the deal. It's a combination of both. I think if you went through and said, so there's 32 teams in the NFL. Yep. If you went through and said, let me find the top 32 players in the NFL and also factored in what teams need, because I mean, like, let's be honest, you're not just ranking them in order because teams aren't, you know, like certain teams aren't going to take a quarterback or don't need an edge rusher or don't need an offensive tackle, whatever. I don't know if Will Johnson would be in the first round right now as a sophomore with 2 to 3 grades of grown men ahead of him. I just think that's being fair. The reason why I think Pro Football loves this kind of thing is because what they slurped Will Johnson all year, and rightfully so. The kid was phenomenal. He was outstanding. Yeah. But Will Johnson repeatedly came back as one of the highest graded Pro Football focused players in the country. So if they're going to list their best players, what are they going to lean on? They're going to lean on their own formula that they have. And somebody would immediately say, like, dude, how could Will Johnson be the best cover corner in man-to-man all season and you guys don't give him any love when it comes to this NFL thing you're doing? So, like, I think there's a little bit of both. Like, I think it speaks to how good Will Johnson already is and how good he's going to be. And, yes, I do think maybe top 10, top 15 pick is in his future. First of all, like, it's kind of rare for corners to go that high unless you're the Lions and you're taking Jeff Okuda. It's not like the typical position you see going in the top 5 or top 10, but he's really freaking good. Like, he's incredible. He's going to be an All-American. Like, he's the real deal.
I agree. I mean, like I said, when I leading into this question, I think Will Johnson is tremendously talented. I do think he's a future first round pick if he continues on this trajectory, but he started 5 games during his freshman year.
Yeah.
And in the 5 games he did start, he played pretty well. I mean, he had a couple of picks in the Big Ten championship game. I think he led the team in tackles, or he had a career high 8 tackles against Ohio State. So he showed up big in big moments. But to list him as a top 10 pick right now, to me, that just seems like it's a little bit overblown. But it does speak to, you know, I think the tremendous upside that's there and that, you know, the potential he has down the road. I certainly don't think he's there yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he ultimately becomes during his time at the University of Michigan.
Outstanding term. I wish I would have thought of it. I'm going to use it more often. Matt Kirby, thank you. Yes, ball washing.
Ball washing.
A little bit of ball washing going on here. Shining them up just a bit, but it's here's the thing. Neither one of us are like losing our minds over it, which is
no.
It speaks to how good he is and how good we both think that he will be. I mean, yeah, dude, he unseated some really veteran, pretty freaking good players. Right. I mean, like, Jamon Green, DJ Turner getting rotationally sat down for Will Johnson at times.
Right. And then think, even after only starting 5 games during his freshman year, think about the sense of security he's already providing us leading up to 20, like we already, like that position's taken care
locked.
Of. It's locked down. Like, there's no question about it. And so again, it's not like it was surprising to see him thought of as a top 10 pick right now, but I certainly wouldn't be shocked if that was the case 2 years from now, because the guy's only going to get better and he's already a tremendous player, but we'd like to see him have a full season under his belt and see what that looks like before I go putting the top 10 marker on him.
So Steve Deese, Burner, I agree with what you said, but no, I'm pretty sure Pro Football, they meant now, right? Like they
right now.
This wasn't a projection thing.
No. This was if they were eligible right now in this year's draft, because CJ Stroud was also listed in the same lineup. Obviously Stroud is declared for the NFL. So this was Take eligibility out of it. Just take the top 10 players right now that you think would be selected right now. Will Johnson was number 10 going to the Philadelphia Eagles, which I like. I like that. Lining up in that Eagles helmet with the dark visor.
Yeah, the black. Yeah. Or the throwback.
Seems like a really good fit, actually.
Or the throwback, like Randall Cunningham greens with the the silver. Dude.
Yeah, man.
Sign me up for that. All right. Chris, I put an article out a few days ago. Speaking of the Philadelphia, man, look at these segues, dude. Speaking of the Philadelphia Eagles, they have, and it might be a moot point in about another couple months because there's talk of the rule being changed. But the Philadelphia Eagles and Jalen Hurts have perfected the quarterback sneak. In fact, Jalen Hurts converted on his quarterback sneak tries 90% of the time this year, 36 out of 40 times. I was actually surprised they only ran it 40 times because the way it works, whether it's third and two or fourth and one and two or at the goal line or whatever the case may be, they get Jalen Hurts right up under center. He's a known power lifter. The dude squats like 600 pounds. I mean, he's jacked. He's big. He's strong. He's listed at 6'2", 223. He's obviously a phenomenal athlete. He runs really well. And they get any number of guys. The screenshot that I specifically used had the tight end, Dallas Goedert, on his left hip and a small running back, Boston Scott, 5'6", 205 or 202, whatever he is, on his right hip. They snap it. The offensive line, which is usually bigger than the defensive line, kind of submarines, pushes him out just a little bit. And then the two skill guys get their hands on the quarterback and push him forward before the defense ever can really even do. I mean, like,
now, dude, it's like the NFL already thinking about changing that?
It. They are. There's some talk about it. But as of right now, it is allowed. And so I immediately said Michigan needs to do this right away. And they've got their version of Jalen Hurts on the roster. And that is one Mr. Alex Orji. And if Omarion Walker isn't your dude this year, it's probably Alex Orji, because I know how much you like him too. He's got this, he's got the drip.
He's incredible. He looks like he arrived as a grown ass man to campus.
I don't want to admit to how many shirtless photos we have of the guy from the beach trip, but there's a lot.
They're justified. They're justified.
I put this out there. All right, there's what I see. There's your O-line. I didn't specify who would be at center, right tackle, or light tackle. We already had that discussion. Cornelius Johnson, your receiver off to the right. Bigger bodied guy, pretty fast. He can use whatever. Loveland, your starting tight end. Mullings and Corum in the background, in the backfield with Orji. You shove them in. I feel like it would work at a 90% clip. I really and truly do. So here's my question. All that to ask you this. Does Michigan need to do something like this, i.e., an Alex Orji package where he's on the field all the time for certain situations, or is it dumb anytime nine is on the sideline?
No, I don't think so, because in that type of situation, I would want Orji as the guy who's trying to get the short yardage, and I think somebody might have said it in the comments, but that's not a situation that I want to put J.J. McCarthy in, even though I think he's tough. He is a bit undersized, and once you get, you know, you start shoving him around, get him in the pile, get those big bodies on top of him.
By the way, Alex Orji is listed at 6'3", 235. He's 12 pounds heavier than Jalen Hurts.
And he's jacked. I mean, there's you know, we saw him on the beach over the summer tour. There's photos coming out of him, you know, doing the workouts during spring. I mean, the guy's just absolutely jacked. And I think he's built for that type of contact. And so if it's a short yardage situation where you're on the goal line, for the love of God, within the 2 yard line, do not run Philly special. Do not put it in Colson Loveland's hand and try to throw some sort of reverse pass. Do what Philadelphia did. Bring out Alex Orji, line up the big boys and say, this is what we're doing. It doesn't have to be a surprise. And it's not when Philly does it. This is what we're going to do. The defense knows it's coming. The offense knows it's coming. And then it's just man on man. See who wins. And looking at that lineup, to me, it feels like Michigan wins.
There are so many things you just said right there that make this point even more of a no-brainer, in my opinion. Because as soon as I put the article out, I got a lot of pushback around some of the things you just said. People say, well, don't do that. Everybody would know they're going to do that. Dude, everybody knows Philly is going to do it, and it works 90% of the time. And oh, by the way, I think Michigan's got a head coach who doesn't give a shit if people know what they're going to do, because he does that all the time. First and goal from the one, Corum. Second and goal from the one, Corum. Third and goal from the one, Corum. Like, dude, this is Jim Harbaugh all top to bottom. This has got his name all over it.
You do it a handful of times, and then oops, Orgy pops it over the top to Loveland in the back of the end zone or something like that. You know, you can switch it up every now, but I am not, and that's a great point. It's not like people are shocked. The most shocking thing about the Michigan offense was the Philly special against TCU. I think everybody was like, what the fuck was that? And it clearly didn't work. Well, what people expect was run Donovan Edwards, run Blake Corum. These are the things that you do. And so it's not like Michigan's offense is extremely unpredictable. There's a lot of trickeration going on. It's line up, man on man, smash mouth football, and run it with your workhorse. And on occasion, try to take the top off the defense. And so, yeah, I don't see anything wrong with it. Whether or not the defense knows what's coming, I'm totally fine with that. Line up, and if it's a short yardage situation and you got to get a yard or less, I trust that offensive line with a guy like Mullings and Corum in the backfield, Orgy carrying the ball. Yeah, I think they can move the ball 12 inches.
Yeah, it just seems like a no-brainer to me. I mean, I don't know if we'll see it. If there's a rule change made, then scrap the whole thing. I mean, who cares? But
yeah,
just watching it, I mean, you go back to the Philly special against TCU. You go back to trying to hand it to Khalil Mullings out of a close three-point stance that we haven't seen all year long. I mean, this eliminates any type of ball handling except for the quarterback center exchange, which you have to do on every play. There's no handoff. There's no fake. There's no timing. It's just grab it, go forward. We've already talked about the strength of the O-line is that interior. You've got Zinner. You've got Keegan. You've got Nugent. Somebody mentioned Chris Jones from the Kansas City Chiefs. Dude got taken for a ride on the top of the pile. Yeah. He's 320 pounds. He's an all-pro. Had no answer for it. None.
And from what I've seen on social media, and this is courtesy of Mr. Orgy himself, he has no interest in giving the ball away on an RPO or anything like that. He's keeping the ball in spring practice. That's pretty well known right now. So this is a guy who likes to keep the ball. He likes to run it. He likes the contact. And yeah, I think that that's a perfect situation where you take JJ McCarthy out of that. You don't risk getting him injured on a short yardage play like that. And you let the big boys go do what they do. And I think Michigan could be very successful in that.
And we've also seen a little bit of a precedence with this. When JJ McCarthy was a true freshman and, you know, Cade McNamara, whatever you think about him or thought about him even at the time, he was winning games and he was moving the offense. And Jim Harbaugh would take Cade McNamara out for a freshman JJ McCarthy to come in and run the ball. He did it quite a bit.
Yep.
This isn't weird in any way. It's not like trickery. It's not, it's completely in line with Jim Harbaugh's methodology and philosophy as an offensive guy. And it plays into so many strengths that Michigan has. It just seems like a no-brainer to me. Like I said, I did see, I think it was Dan General said, well, you're taking some touchdown passes away from JJ. How many? A couple? They don't throw the ball that much from that position. They really don't. What you're really taking away is Blake Corum's touchdown total, not JJ McCarthy's passing total. So, I don't know. Would you be okay with that, Chris? I mean, suddenly, instead of Blake Corum getting two or three touchdowns a game, he might only be getting one. And his total's not as high. I mean, does that bother you at all?
I'm fine with it. It's not affecting my Heisman candidacy at all, so I'm not worried about it. You know, whatever gets the ball in the end zone and moves it forward and keeps us from seeing the shit that we saw against TCU. Just do what you know works once you get inside the 3-yard line. I mean, God damn it. I don't want to rehash the semifinal game, but I mean, this was a team that was built on bully football, push people around, and just, you know, point A to point B, and got away from that, got a little bit cute with it, and it cost them big in the biggest game of the season. And so I'd like to see Michigan get back to that, and I think Alex Orgy could play a pretty big role in that. I'm going to piggyback off of that before I get into my next question right now. Just out of curiosity, do you think the successor to J.J. McCarthy is currently on the roster? And if so,
that's a good question. I mean, you and I have both talked about like the offense that Michigan runs. I think Alex Orgy could do it this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's predominantly run, you know, hit a deep play action ball when it's there, which we saw JJ McCarthy struggle with that a lot this year, quite a bit, actually. So we've said that a couple of times, Chris, you and I know we have in private conversation. It's like, just go out and find the best athlete ever at quarterback and let him play the position, because he doesn't – I mean, can you go find a guy who can throw 16 touchdown passes and hand it off 50 times?
Can you throw – get me Shoelace 2.0 in that position, and I'd be just fine.
I mean, I would love to imagine
Denard Robinson, Donovan Edwards, and Blake Corum all lined up. What? How are you going to deal with that? A player like that. I mean, you know, and JJ almost has. I mean, he is that true dual threat guy. We've seen he has the ability to get out. He doesn't really have the afterburners to take it the distance, but he can rip off 20, 30, 40 yard runs. And we saw it last year.
Yeah. So I would love to say that Alex Orji is the next guy. I mean, I would love to see him stay and stick it out and be the successor and develop and turn into a very exciting running, slinging. I mean, he's got an incredibly strong arm too. This is not a guy who does arm punts back there. I mean, the dude can wing it. And he's built, you know, he's built like a brick house. He obviously would add something to the run game. I like that idea a lot. We just haven't seen enough of him. So I don't know if I can make that, you know, a very educated prediction that he could be the guy.
But like JJ going into his junior year now will have the opportunity to go pro after this season. And there's still a bit of uncertainty about how, you know, when it was JJ in the waiting, it was like, we knew who the next guy was going to be.
Sure.
I'm not sure that Michigan has that right now. There's a lot of people that can make a strong case for Davis Warren and that he's extremely underrated, very consistent. Another guy who could step in and run this type of offense and, you know, not be asked to do too much. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see how next year plays out. I do think JJ McCarthy comes back for his senior season, but it's going to be interesting. It's an interesting thing to think about whether or not that guy's currently on the roster. Yeah. All right, Brandon, I'm going to go to number four here. Michigan. The Michigan Wolverines football program hasn't had undefeated back-to-back undefeated regular season since the 1940s.
Wow.
They also haven't beaten Ohio State in three straight games since the mid-90s. Do they accomplish both of those in 2023?
Yeah. I mean, I just...
Undefeated,
yeah.
Win against Ohio State, perfect season again, perfect regular season 2023. That's pretty high praise from Brandon Brown.
I just don't know how you say otherwise right now. I don't know what your evidence would be. And Chris, I know you made like some bold, like out on the limb type. Dude, it's not weird to say they could go to Penn State and lose this year. Penn State's a talented team.
Yep.
Looking at the schedule, we figured that's probably going to be a night game, white out type of situation. Incredibly hard place to play. They've got this big time 5-star quarterback who's waiting to take over. That'll be,
By the way, that game comes in the midst of a five games, seven games where five are on the road, and that's one of them.
Week seven, week eight, or something like that? I mean, it's
like the second week in November, I think.
So maybe later than that. So you've got this kid, Drew Aller, who's been playing all year. He's no longer like a newcomer at the quarterback position. There's every possible chance that Michigan could go into that game and maybe lose. And then health. I mean, dude, there's so many unknowns when it comes to the football season. But I think as you look at things right now, the safest bet, and this is, dude, we are killing the segues this week, by the way. I think if you look at everything right now, you'd be dumb to pick against Michigan. Dumb.
Yeah, it feels like it. I mean, and here's the thing. I guess I might be a little dumb because the idea, look, they haven't gone back-to-back undefeated regular season since the 40s, and then I look at that schedule where 5 of 7 are on the road, including a week, I think it's the week 10 matchup in Happy Valley against Penn State. I do think Michigan loses that road game to Penn State, but when I talked to Mozzie Smith about this, he brought up the game against TCU and how TCU lost the conference championship game and talked a little bit about how sometimes that does take the pressure off of a team and you kind of reset yourself. And I think that late season loss to Penn State doesn't knock Michigan off its track. I think they still beat Ohio State. I think they still win the Big Ten championship. And I think that loss during the regular season propels them to a national championship in 2023. So, yeah, while I am calling for a loss during the regular season, I think it ultimately results in a national championship by the time it's all said and done.
So that would mean that Penn State would have to lose to somebody else other than Ohio State.
And I think they will. So, I mean, I don't think Penn State has, you know, I don't think they're going to be, what were they last year? 8-4, you know, they had during the regular season, 8-4, yeah, something
I'd have,
like
I'd
that.
Have to look. No, I think they were better than that.
No, they were 10. Didn't they get?
Yeah, they ended up being Michigan, like,
they lost Ohio State.
They ended up being fringely mentioned as a potential back into the playoff type of team. It wasn't going to happen, but
Yeah. I don't think they're going to have that good of a season. I do think that they're going to lose a couple games this upcoming season. You know, but I like I said, I don't think it's going to be enough to knock Michigan. I just can't see. I don't think Michigan's going to go perfect. I don't think they're going to have a perfect regular season. And when I look at the schedule, to me, that one just looks like the most likely. Unless, you know, you've got early in the season, you've got to go on the road to Nebraska, and then you've got to go on the road to Minnesota. That could be a two tough road games earlier in the year. But to me, the one that stands out the most is the late season road game at Happy Valley. You know it's going to be at night. You know it's going to be a whiteout. You know Michigan's probably going to be ranked number three or number two at that point. They're going to have Heisman Trophy candidate Blake Corum in the back. That place is going to be rocking. And I think, you know, if you do trip, that's where it happens.
Penn State finished the year 11-2. I mean, they beat very good Utah team in the Rose Bowl, and they won 10 games in the regular season. They only lost to Michigan.
Yeah, but Utah did lose their starting quarterback during the Rose Bowl, went down with an injury. Worth noting.
But, yeah, I mean, look, when you look at the schedule, that's the game. Besides the game, that's the game. That's the game that where you say, like, they could lose that one, and it wouldn't be, like, egregious. But I just think if you're looking – excuse me. If you're looking at everything from start to finish right now,
they'll be favored. I think they'll be favored in every single game. So,
and there's where I am on my last game. My last question, Chris, I believe the preliminary lines came out on FanDuel today, and Michigan is favored against Ohio State for the first time since, was it 2018 when they got shellacked, even though they were favored?
Was it on the road?
Maybe it was 19.
Weren't they favored on the road, or was it at home?
I think it was 18. Whatever it was, it's been a handful of years, and obviously the game's played out that way until recently. Michigan is did you see the line, Chris? Do you know where it is?
I didn't see the line, no.
Okay, first of all, take a guess, and then we'll discuss.
Probably Ohio State getting 3.
Ohio State is getting 2. Michigan is favored by 2 points. Is that enough? Is that too little? Is that respectable? Is that where it should be, given where the rivalry is now and what Michigan's done over the last two seasons?
But it's hard because there's bias on my side. I've watched Michigan beat the shit out of Ohio State 2 years in a row now.
Dominate.
And I know that there's, you know, this sense, it's kind of like the Alabama thing. Like, you just always expect Ohio State's going to be Ohio State. And over the last 2 years, Michigan has really put an end to that. At least
breaking
for the time
in a new
being.
Quarterback.
They're breaking in a new quarterback. It's in Ann Arbor. To me, that number's too low, too small.
I think it's a little low too. I do. I mean, I don't know how you can look at a 15-point win and a 21-point win with a guy like CJ Stroud, who's going to be a top 5, top 10 draft pick, and now suddenly it's a toss up basically in Ann Arbor. I with what Michigan's returning now, it should be higher than that. This is Vegas. If it's higher than that, you're not going to get the money on both sides. Like, I get it, right. I get it, but I don't. Looking at what they did the last 2 years, Michigan's a better than -2 against Ohio State, period. And that's freaking awesome. Is that awesome?
Period. You know what? Dude, these questions, the way the flow, listen, we don't rehearse. This might shock the hell out of all of you, all 25 of you listening out there, but we don't rehearse this prior to going in. We don't know what the other person's going to ask, but this is a great segue into my final question, Brandon.
I'm telling you, we've been on it today, and part of it is we don't want to rehearse because, like, what the hell? That's just
take some of the majesty out of it.
It'd be like doing the show twice, but also in some of these cases, we want to be, especially for burning questions, we want to be on the spot. Like, that's the design of the segment. So, with that being said,
we're talking about Ohio State. We're talking about how we think Michigan should be favored. But yeah, I think we're both picking them to win that game. That would bring Jim Harbaugh's overall record against Ohio State to 3-5, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? 3-5. They didn't play during the COVID year, so it didn't have the chance to go 0-6.
I think it's 3-6.
Are you sure?
Because this will be his 10th year? 9th year.
No. Three and five. Right. So this would bring his record, assuming Michigan can get the win this fall against Ohio State, to 3-5. Here's my question. By the time it's all said and done, Does Jim Harbaugh finish his coaching career at the University of Michigan with a winning record over Ohio State? Something that seemed unimaginable after an 0-5 start to the Buckeyes. Does he turn it around? Does he finish his Michigan coaching career with a winning record over Ohio State?
Holy shit, there's a lot of ifs in that question. Or in my answer, I should say.
Let's just assume, let's assume for sake of the question that the NFL stuff is officially over.
Well, but that would be a pretty big part of my answer.
But that's what I'm saying. So that it's just like the injury thing, right? That's a big variable that we don't know. So let's assume that this was the last hurrah, the last peak. Now he's in. Whatever deal he's going to sign with Michigan is going to be a long-term deal. Okay. The NFL thing is over. If he remains at the University of Michigan, whether it's 5 years, 6 years, however long it is, do you think he does it?
If you give me that caveat, it does become a lot more difficult.
The NFL's over. We'll put that as that is a for sure. The NFL is out of the picture. He is staying at Michigan for the long haul. I can't tell you whether it's going to be 5, 6, 7 years, minimum of 5 years.
So he's only got to win two more to get to 500. And I think he gets another one this year. So damn. Dude, I think I'm going to say yes. I think he probably finishes with a winning record against them. And that's fucking bananas. Because I think he's going to get another one this year.
I remember when we were talking about 0-5, proclaiming, slamming that he will end, whenever it ends, he will end with a losing record to Ohio State, that he can never recover. It's such a deep hole, and Ohio State is so good, so consistent as a program, that there's no way he's going to be able to make that up. You get that win this year, and then you're 3-5 against the Buckeyes, two games away from 500. And I certainly think that by the time it's all said and done, if the NFL stuff is over, in fact, indeed, we'll see. I think it is. Yeah.
Wait. He's 2-5 against them.
He is 2-5 currently. This would be this year. If he wins, that would be 3-5. So he'd be two games away from 500 on a 3-game winning streak against the Buckeyes. All the momentum in Michigan's favor.
Man, that's tough. That's
Noah Fryer coming to save the day. Ryan Day, I mean, shit. Ryan Day goes 0-3.
He might be done after this year if they lose again by 20 again.
They might be looking for another head coach.
If Michigan and Harbaugh bang him out with another 20 piece, he might be done.
They will be called. I mean, there was already a segment of the fan base calling for his head after this last one. If he loses three straight to the Michigan Wolverines, they will be calling for his head.
At that point, I actually think it becomes a little more legitimate, because it's not just the Michigan thing. You're now also 3 years of not making it to the Big Ten championship. And yep. I mean, I know they backed their way into the title game or to the playoff last year, but you're starting to see some things at Ohio State become regular that aren't supposed to be regular. And so, man, dude.
So if you had to put money on it, NFL out of the picture.
Oh, that's what I was going to look up.
You say yes.
Dude, that's a really good question. Oh, that's a great question. I'll just be the board since we don't have it plugged in anymore. Jim Harbaugh is 59 years old. He's probably, if the NFL is out, he'll probably coach at Michigan another 10 years minimum.
Yeah.
Late 60s? I mean, probably. Yep.
65 at a minimum.
You'd think at least 5 or 6 more years, for sure. Lock that down. But what has he always said? I'm going to play football, I'm going to coach football, and I'm going to die. Dude, he's going to coach till he's 90 if he's got the faculties.
I don't want it to become another Joe Paterno situation, though, where it's he's not able to be down in the field, so he's got to be up in the box, and you're kind of wheeling him. It's like Weekend at Bernie's with a head coach. I don't want it to be that.
You know what? I've been watching a lot of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Jim Harbaugh is so much like Larry David in that show, it's not even funny. And he actually he quotes Larry David. I've started to realize as I've gotten deeper and deeper into the series. Man, dude, that's a really good question. So
well,
I do
a
think
turn of events that you do think he'll finish, because I do too. I think with the momentum that's built, listen, for
Wait. You took the NFL off the board for me. That's not even enough. I still think that's a very real option.
Okay, so you I guess that's where we differ, because I do think the NFL is done. I think that this was his last chance, and whether or not he wants to return to the NFL, I don't think the NFL is going to come calling.
That's what I was just going to say. The reason why I don't think it's done is because all it's going to take is one franchise, one owner to put a piece of paper in front of him, and that's it.
Yeah,
I truly think he wants to go back to the NFL, but he's just found out that, first of all, shit's pretty damn good in Ann Arbor, and second of all, he hasn't got an opportunity to go back. And like, I think maybe, you know, maybe he underestimated that a little bit. You know, things have changed in the NFL quite a bit since he's been gone, and it's not there for him right now. But I do think if an owner and a franchise pulled the trigger and presented him with a contract, that he would go pro, that he would go back to the league.
I don't think it's going to happen. And that's why
I'm not overly confident that it will happen. I just think that if it does, he would take it.
But in the absence, what you're saying is, in the absence of an NFL, if he were to take one, absent of that, you think he finishes his Michigan coaching career?
I think he's
with a winning record against the Buckeyes.
I think he's turned the tide in a major way to play a brand of football that they can't mess with right now.
Never would have guessed that after 0-5. Like I was saying, Ohio State was viewed as just juggernaut. They're not going to go away, even if you can steal one here and there. Like, to me, it just seemed like it was going to continue down that path of Ohio State stacking wins. And, you know, maybe if these last two wins had been different, maybe if it was close, maybe if Michigan had to eke it out, maybe if something crazy happened, like what happened back in 2016, where, you know, it was a spot that got Ohio State the win. Maybe if it was something like that happened for Michigan, I would feel a little bit differently about it. But the Wolverines have just flat out bullied Ohio State, beat the shit out of them convincingly, and had fun doing it. And I just feel like, that, you know, where Ohio State used to feel like this unconquerable, just giant of a mountain to try to get to the top of, doesn't seem like that anymore. It sure as hell doesn't feel like that from where I'm sitting. They feel like a very beatable program. Don't really fear Ryan Day all that much. Don't really fear what they have to offer. I think Michigan's the better team, and I think you're going to see more of the same in 2023. I hope it's worse.
That's
my only concern, is that it has been so long. Like what JJ said when I did the sit down interview with him, where he pointed to, you know, Andrell's now departed and with Oklahoma, but pointed to Donovan Edwards and said, that's all we know is beating Ohio State.
And at that point, it was only one time, but it was still true.
It was only one time, still true as of today. Now it's two. And I just hope that they keep that fire going, because, man, for such a long time, it was brutal for this fan base. You know, these guys were, you know, I don't know, wearing in diapers while some Michigan fans were still going through the heartache and the you know, the pain of getting the asses kicked by Ohio State. And so, you know, two wins is great, but I sure as hell don't feel satisfied. I mean, Michigan needs to go on a serious run against the Buckeyes and really take control over this rivalry. And I think the last two games have been you couldn't ask for a better start to changing that trajectory.
Yeah, no, there's, I mean, I've said it from the very beginning, since I've ever got into this business, dude. I call it like I see it, and that's how I see it, dude. Michigan is better than Ohio State right now, and Jim Harbaugh is doing better at building his roster and putting a product on the field that can beat Ryan Day and Ohio State. That's just what it is. It wasn't that way in 2020 and before. It has been since 2021. I don't know, man. It's right. It's all out there. It's all out there for Jim Harbaugh to really seize this thing. I mean, dude, he's 2-5. Let's not talk about like he freaking owns Ohio State all of a sudden. But right now, he does. Right now, on this day, he does. And if he stays long enough, he's 59. You know, a good 6-8 years left in him before you start to be like, all right, bro, like you're getting a little old for the shit. Like, you know, what's it going to be? But dude, he is the kind of guy who would coach till he's 100, probably, if he's allowed to do so. And so we'll see what that ends up looking like. But yeah, I do think they're going to win again this year. That'll be 3-5. And then you're one step closer to getting that thing back to even.
Let me piggyback on this just a little bit, because if Michigan does, you know, continue the success, if they beat Ohio State this year, obviously we both believe that that's going to put Michigan back into the Big Ten championship. And, you know, you got to play a team from the West. It just feels like it's at this point, until we figure out what's going to happen with USC and UCLA and what type of realignment we're looking at, it just feels like whatever team comes out of the East is going to the college football playoff. That being said, I put up a poll today on the Facebook page, and I just asked people with, you know, how they felt about Jim Harbaugh, the trajectory of the program. We know that he's 1-6 in bowl games if you count, you know, the college football playoff in that, which I think is a little bit unfair to do. But either way you cut it, in postseason games, Jim Harbaugh is 1-6. 90%, we had almost 2,000 people respond to that poll, and 90% of those fans believe that Jim Harbaugh is going to win a national championship before his time is done in Ann Arbor. So I asked you, will he finish his coaching career with a winning record over Ohio State, assuming he stays and the NFL isn't a thing? I'll ask you the same question about a national championship. Do you, as of today, think Michigan is capable of winning it all with Jim Harbaugh as head coach?
Yes, it is this
year.
Not
capable. Will he? Will he get it done?
It's really hard, man. I mean, you keep seeing. I mean, they shouldn't have lost to TCU. Like that one hurts, because I feel like they had more talent, and it just the way that game played out, I felt like they should have been better prepared and they should have won that game. I don't think it would have mattered. I mean, Georgia was just, dude, 65-7. Are you kidding me? I don't think maybe they would have beat Michigan that badly, but I don't think Michigan's beating that team this year. I don't think they're beating them last year. As many times as you want to line it up, I don't think it's going to happen. Obviously, you know, they lose all those first-round draft picks, and it doesn't even matter. Now they lose Stetson Bennett, and you're like, all right, now there's a little way in. It probably doesn't matter. I mean, I just feel like some of those teams, when they're really rolling and they're really a machine like that, the Bamas of a few years ago, Miami back in the day, Ohio State for a stretch run there, like, Michigan had no business being on the field with Ohio State a few years ago. They didn't. I mean, you don't lose by 30 to a team and say like, it just wasn't our day. Like, no, they're a lot better than you. And I just feel like Georgia's kind of still in that boat. I mean, we'll see what it looks like this year, but the way they recruit, Alabama's going to be back up there. Ohio State's going to be good. I do think Michigan will beat them again this year and be better. I think it's crazy. As good as the last 2 years have been, I do think that this year's their best chance to win one.
Yep. That's where I'm at. And I've seen some people say it in the comments. I think this is the year because you can't win two straight conference championships, make it to the college football playoff twice, and then arguably return your best coaching staff, your best roster, and regress and take a step back. And so the next step forward for Michigan is making it to the national championship game. Yeah. If they can do that with a junior quarterback in J.J. McCarthy, veteran running back Blake Corum, who's a Heisman Trophy candidate, NFL offensive line, a defense that's loaded everywhere with experience and NFL talent, to me, this is the year that Michigan has to break through. If Jim Harbaugh is going to capture a national championship at Michigan, it's got to happen this year, because I do think, and again, I'm saying what I feel here. I don't think they're going to make four straight Big Ten championships. I don't think they're going to make four straight trips to the college football playoff. I do think that there is going to be, it's inevitable. I mean, even look at the great teams, Alabama, Clemson, you know,
There's regression.
It happens. I don't think it happens this year, but I do think it happens in 2024. And so I think Michigan, Jim Harbaugh, they've got to capitalize on it this year. And if you can win the national championship this year, it might change the course of the future in terms of recruiting and what things look like down the road. But I think if you don't capitalize on it this year with, like I said, arguably your best coaching staff and your best roster, to me, this feels like the best shot. And you know, all the pieces are there. And if you can't get it done this year, then I really start to wonder when.
It's funny though, because I almost just said a line that I think we could have said both of the last 2 years. And that line was going to be, I mean, how can it get better again? It's done that the last 2 years in a row. Like in 2021, I'm sure we both kind of said or thought like, well, how can it be better next year? Oh, and it was. And then last year was incredible. And now we're saying after last year, which is kind of where we're at right now, but we think 2023 is going to be better than 2022 was. So I'd say it again, how could it be better in 2024 than it was in 2023? And like that's continued to happen, but you're right. There's regression. If you stack a couple subpar recruiting classes together, which a lot of people think this 2023 group was a little subpar, then you're going to start to see that on the field. We'll see what continues to happen with NIL. We'll see what continue happens with the transfer portal, the staff. Like you said, I mean, there's, yeah, dude. I mean,
does it even matter? Does what I mean, if you're winning a Big Ten championship and you're beating Ohio State, I mean, even if you don't win the, like, does it really matter? Does it matter if you don't win the national championship?
Like,
I mean, I feel like there is a lot of Michigan football fans out there that are perfectly content with winning the Big Ten and beating Ohio State.
Dude, if you could sign up for the last 2 years for the next 30, do it.
You'll take it.
give me the paper now. I mean, but you'd like to win the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
When you feel like you've got most of the formula to do so, most of the pieces to do so, you'd like to do it. You'd like to.
And the reason I say that is because a lot of the argument that comes from people who don't think it's going to happen is like, look, yeah, Michigan can win the Big Ten, but once you get up against those SEC teams, it's a different animal, and you just can't expect Michigan to compete with a team that's loaded with five-star talent. It's got an incredible NIL program humming along, and that's where they think the big discrepancy is. And so, you know, even if, I don't know, man, it's weird because it almost feels like, it almost feels like that's really the only thing that matters at Michigan now is beating Ohio State and winning a Big Ten championship. And I don't know that the national championship carries as much relevance to the vast majority of the fan base as those other two things do.
And we're within a year of a complete rehaul of the playoff. And so
that's true.
You know, a lot of this stuff is, I mean, dude, Michigan's going to get in every year. If
every
there's
year.
10, 12 teams or whatever they end up moving to, I think it's 8, first of all. But it probably will eventually be 12 or 16 or whatever. You know what? I think, you know, derivatives of 4 work the best because then you just move them down. There's no buy. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, whatever it ends up looking like, it's about to change within like a year time. It's not going to be 4 anymore. And so that, you know, then have the discussion again. Does all of a sudden having 8 or 12 playoff teams mean recruiting changes again? Because now people are thinking, you know, players like, well, I can go to that other school and still make the playoff. Like, that's pretty cool. Before, three teams to pick from. And, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting topic. Very interesting topic. And I think 2023 is as good of a shot as there's going to be in the foreseeable future. And we've talked about this before, too, though. Like, Jim Harbaugh is playing chess in a little bit of a way with the transfer portal. Like, you know, he's doing things in the transfer portal that's making up for not signing a class like Texas A&M did with an absurd approach to NIL. And now they're not anything. Finished the year unranked, you know, losing to everybody. So, man, what a time to be alive, dude. Jim Harbaugh coached until he's 70, beating the shit out of Ohio State, winning titles, bro. I
don't have a lot of them gone. And how about your boys going about an hour and a half on a random Wednesday?
Didn't even know if we had a show.
Shabby.
Pretty good.
Here it is. It all comes full circle once again. Once again.
Man, bro.
We should do these more often, maybe.
Good times we're had. Yeah, it turns out we're not bad at this shit.
Yeah, not bad. After a couple weeks off.
It wasn't a huge audience, but we do really appreciate everybody who was here, everybody who gave a little donation, everybody who chimed in, gave us something to talk about.
Nobody really gives a shit about what's happening right now. Everybody's just kind of in the same mode, waiting for the spring game to come. That'll be fun. And then you get through summer, and then as we get close to fall, we'll start cooking. But, man, we'll try to do as many of these as we possibly can. If nothing else, we're getting reps. We got to get reps, Brandon. Reps. Just like the players do, you know? We got to get in game shape. We got to be ready come fall as well.
Everybody else, give Chris the finger. He's heading to Florida in a few days, and he's leaving us all behind. And
sayonara.
We'll see what that looks like down
there. I don't even know if I want to say it. I went back to the well. I did what I said I wouldn't do, and I booked your Spirit.
Oh, he's flying Spirit, ladies and gentlemen. He's flying Spirit.
I said I wouldn't do it after that fiasco with Arizona, but goddamn it, those bear fares, those low fares, they they lure me in, and then I get hit with all the baggage shit and all the carry-on shit, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, I should have just flown a decent airline.
Chris will be—he'll have a yellow belt on. He'll be dressing the part. Even that's how committed he is to Spirit Airlines.
I love it. I might get a part-time job there. Unloading bags.
All right, everybody, take care, dude. I might go. I might fly a solo show next Wednesday. How about that? Just to keep it rolling. Or maybe I'll get a guest. Maybe I'll try to get a guest. I don't know. I'm saying that now because I feel I'm on like a high from the show.
You're on a heater. You're on a heater.
We both know I'm not doing no damn show next week. DJ Frazier wants to join. We'll see what happens. All right. Take care, everybody.
Appreciate you.